Stay up to date on the groundbreaking tests and solutions powering the healthcare system. You're listening to Diagnostic Dialogues from Quest Diagnostics. Here's your host, Dr. Pat Alesia.
Welcome to Diagnostic Dialogues, where today we are completing the third of a three-part series of the past, present, and future of diagnostic medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Damian Alesia, and today we have the opportunity to hear from two incredibly talented and experienced intellectual heavyweights in the world of diagnostic medicine who will share their insights with us about how artificial intelligence will inform the future of clinical and anatomic pathology. From the clinical pathology side, we will be hearing from Dr. Elena Einbaum, MD, PhD, who is an expert in GYN, breast, cytopathology, as well as molecular biology. Although she resides in sunny Southern California and works out of our West Hills labs, she shares her high-powered diagnostic insights with many of her 600 medical and scientific colleagues at Quest across the United States, as well as with many of her professional colleagues as a consultant, representing anatomic pathology and the rapidly emerging field of digital pathology and artificial intelligence, is Dr. Peter Borkowski, MD, who leads the work being done in this rapidly emerging area from his East Coast laboratory in Tampa, Florida. He is a recognized authority and leader in this fascinating and incredibly important area of medicine. So with that as a little bit of background, let's find out a bit more about the future of laboratory medicine and clinical pathology. Dr. Einbaum, Dr. Borkowski, welcome.
Thank you so much, Dr. Alesia, for this fantastic opportunity to speak on behalf of our company and discuss latest updates in AI and digital technology.
Thank you so much, Dr. Alesia, for your kind introduction. It is an honor and pleasure to participate in this podcast.
It's great to have you all here. So, Dr. Einbaum, let's start with you. Whenever I walk into a clinical pathology laboratory, all I see are machines and thousands of test tubes and specimen cups all lined up, in perfect order, of course, moving in and out of sci-fi-looking machines, connected by wires and cables and pipes and tubes to bottles and tanks and computer screens and, of course, people. What is happening in this place, and why does it require so much infrastructure to provide the clinician, like me, with a simple test?
Yeah, that's a great question, Dr. Alesia, and you gave a great representation of what is happening in the current, in the modern lab there. And imagine, in all those millions and millions of tubes and tests and away performing, there's a lot of patient data. So imagine, so every individual tube is patient information. There is a specific sample of body fluid, of any biological material that represent individual patient and their condition. So not only that, a lot of and millions of tubes, there's actually a lot of analysis and interpretations going in those tubes. So even though when we talk about patient results and we put a look at in the electronic medical record, it seemed very clean and obvious. So we just look for the abnormal results. But in reality, there is a lot going on behind the scene. All those tubes need to be labeled. They need to be matched to a specific workflow. They need to be analyzed in the inappropriate manner to get the result the clinician will require. So that's why it is becoming obvious that some bioinformatics or computational technology is absolutely critical and unavoidable to put all this patient information in the clinical world together. Because imagine every patient in individual and comes with individual sets of conditions with individual cells, sets of biochemical abnormalities, and maybe neoplastic conditions. So we have to understand that everyone requires specific management and specific treatment that will be happening to them. So to put all this together, you really need a robust infrastructure that will allow and make sure that every specific sample for individual patient goes in the right workflow to help us understand a very specific answer about the condition of this patient so we could address it.
So will the artificial intelligence enhance the work that you're doing, or will it be competing with you?
Yeah, that's exactly a perfect question, because as a lab scientist, we always want to have the best data, the most accurate data to make the most precise decisions for every individual patient. So that's why it is called laboratory science. It's laboratory medicine, because the quality of data determines the quality of your decision, and it determines the quality of your management. So imagine human can only do so much, but with help of technology, with help of computational technology or automation, anything that can help or enhance human performance, we would absolutely love that in medicine, in patient care. Because if anything can help me as a physician optimize my performance, I would absolutely invite that in my workflow. And imagine it is very critical in laboratory medicine when we have a lot of things that we historically would do manually. The more I'm able to optimize my workflow, the more I'm able to automate and help technology and sort of give me an opportunity and make my manual work easier, I will benefit from it. And the patient will benefit from the quality of work I'm performing. So if I'm able to give some of duties of laboratory professional to machines or computer and help me analyze this thing, analyze all the information we're going through. Imagine that with my intelligence, with my expertise, I could spend more time with my colleagues and sitting and analyzing the data we're receiving from the eye and from all those computational tools. So in fact, I will be able to use my intellectual capacity with a more benefit to a patient instead of just trying to do work that can actually be done by computational and by machinery.
That's the brilliant part of what is happening now in medicine. I mean, you and Dr. Borkowski are two of the smartest people I know. I mean, you've got an MD and a PhD in molecular biology. You were studying phages before phages were a really cool thing. But the opportunity to expand your intellectual firepower so that you can actually think more about the work you are doing and your colleagues are doing is critically important. And the other point you made about this is going to help you improve the quality of the data, the quality of your insights, and most importantly, the quality of the management for patient care is something that has high resonance with all of us, because at the end of the day, that's the reason we're doing this, is to take care of people. So let me just pivot here a minute. Again, this is incredibly fascinating work you and your colleagues are doing, but what kind of training and education and community of resources are needed not only to do this kind of laboratory work, but to stay at the cutting edge of your specialty and the cutting edge of science and medicine as it evolves so rapidly?
Yeah, so absolutely right. Technology is moving every day. Science is advancing every day. Probably by the time we're recording this, there are new algorithms are available to analyze anything and everything. So it is absolutely critical for us as a healthcare providers to keep up with the latest updates. So yeah, the fundamental base, our education, the fundamental understanding of disease and pathological processes is critical, but we cannot stay in the past. We have to move forward with technology. And the best way I see it in our setting is to to, first of all, to be exchanging information between all of us. So our company that has 600 plus MD PhDs, many of them with advanced business training, to continue growing, to continue developing and excelling their knowledge and understanding of pathological condition in their field. So for me, the very obvious answer is to keep this network going is continuously exchanging information we all know. So that's why I'm very excited to be here with Dr. Berkovsky, who is far ahead in the game, let's say, in certain part of implementation of technology. But at the same time, I'm working in to make those progress in cytology, which is a complementary field to what he's doing. So basically, I feel the more intellectual capacity, the more enthusiastic and optimistic people doing this together, the more opportunity we'll have for provide to our clinicians and to take care of our patients. So that's first of all, and obviously, this is actually how we met with Dr. Berkovsky, and that's how I became close friends with him and his laboratory, because we annually attend national international conference for Digital Pathology Association. We attend meetings that hosted by College of American Pathologists and leadership meetings and summits, where those are designed to bring the latest information, bring the latest developments in our field and show us what is available. And so this is for us to attend those events, to learn the latest, to share our information, to create this data pool of information and exchange between each other and see where my knowledge is complementary or necessary for someone else. So as we're trying to move medicine forward, this is absolutely important for all of us to be doing this together. So to me, it's really the solution to this is sit together, find people who are addressing the same issue together, interested in same patient population or same cohort, and working together and come up with a solution that will help everyone and most important patient.
I think that what you're speaking to is the importance of community. We do believe that medicine's a team sport. It's not just a single doctor or scientist sitting out there quietly in the lab anymore. Or maybe it never really was. Maybe that was more myth than reality. So before we pivot to Dr. Berkovsky, I want to ask you a little bit about one of the communities that you're in within the Quest organization. I think you co-chair either the Breast Resource Committee or the Women's Health Committee. What is it that's going on in there in terms of enhancing your and your colleagues' understanding about maybe one of the areas that's near and dear to you, which is cytopathology?
Yeah, so actually the Breast Committee is co-chaired by my dear friend from Dr. Berkovsky Lab. I currently co-chair Cytology Committee, which is a national panel that includes leaders and pathologists interested in this area of pathology. So we all gather to review latest guidelines, to review latest updates in the field, and to invite our operational people to share with us what is available technologies, what can be use. Because imagine, so all this implementation, all of this fancy technologies is not going to happen overnight. It involves a lot of infrastructure, right? So it involves a lot of things to be moved, adjusted, not only in laboratory space, but in a computer space. We can figure out what is the best solution with the current information that we have and how can we move forward to optimize my workflow and make it the best and the optimal kind of work for everyone.
And I think that's important. I mean, I've never had the opportunity to work in an organization with a higher level of collaboration and esprit de corps than I have here. And you see that among the scientists and the physicians and the operational people, everybody's coming together to focus on optimizing the work that you're doing and also the output. And I know Dr. Berkovsky is going to speak to the quality piece of this, but from what I understand, AI will enhance the quality controls that are in place right now and just continue to improve those. So we never miss anything, which is the big thing. We want to make sure we're identifying everything either that's right in front of us or even adjacent to that. So with that, I'm going to pivot Dr. Einbahn to Dr. Borkowski. Let's talk about anatomic pathology as distinctly different from clinical pathology. You and your colleagues in anatomic path, similar to Dr. Einbaum's colleagues, are the final common pathway in our clinical decision-making and clinical diagnosis. In fact, it now seems like the very sophisticated work you are doing in cancer diagnosis is now taking a quantum leap as you incorporate digitization and AI into the work that you are doing. Can you talk to us, just bring us back a little bit historically, about the work that you did in anatomic pathology before digitization and AI, and how you evaluated the specimens then, and then how are you preparing and evaluating the specimens now, and what happens if you need a second opinion?
Historically, what was before haven't changed much, because like you said, all we need is a good microscope, produce slides and some intelligent life between your eyes, right? So if you look historically again, the pathology really emerged. There was a design of the microscope in the 16th century, but the pathologist, the specialty, emerged in the early 20th century. So yes, we have a biopsy. You're very familiar with that. Surgeons, so there's a biopsy. A section of the tissue is placed on the glass slide, and as a pathologist, we look at it under microscope and render diagnosis. So this is pretty much, in a nutshell, what we do. Now, as far as the consultation, again, traditionally, what we do with outside consult, we peg the slides and usually in a FedEx envelope together with the report, preliminary report, I guess, requisition, the data that we obtained from the clinician, and we ship it to the consulting pathologist. That usually takes a week to receive the results, and that's a lot of manual handling and labor and time, as you can imagine. So that's how it's been done until now. And now we are undergoing a revolution, right? It's a revolution of digital pathology and AI. And now we have digital and AI. What's different, right, in the process and the handling of specimens? So we still have to produce glass slides. So from the moment, like you, Dr. Alicia, obtained the biopsy to the production of the slides, nothing changed. What's extremely important is that the quality of slides is good, right? The pre-analytics are very important when you enter digital age, because if you have artifacts and glue on the slide, then the scanning of the slides is difficult. So yes, scanning is the process after we have the slides ready, and we call it a whole slide image because the scanner captures the whole image, the whole tissue section during scan. Once the scanning is performed, you can imagine that this is a change from the analog slide to digital scan. And it is very important because, you know, with AI, you cannot use AI software on glass slides. You do have to change to digital format, and then you can use AI. So any center that wants to use AI first has to think about digitizing the slides. So, and then again, going back to your question about the consultation, the nice thing about this new technology is that the consultant is, so to speak, at your fingertips, right? You don't have to package anything. You just press the button with the name of the consultant. The image with the information goes via internet. So possibly within minutes or hours, you can get an answer to your question. So this is great for the patient because you're not waiting days or weeks. You can provide the vital information for the clinician within hours. So it's really fantastic. Plus, there's savings associated with it, right? You don't have to spend money on the courier or FedEx or whatever media you're using.
Dr. Borkowski, you all have been trained on a scope. Is it hard to move from the scope to the screen? Does AI help you now identify certain areas of abnormalities that you might have had to look for more closely in the past? Tell me about the improvements that you're going to see.
This is actually both questions are excellent, Dr. Alicia. AI is definitely a fantastic addition. It increases efficiency. You can sign out cases a little bit faster. The experience of signing out the cases is enhanced, meaning it is acting as your assistant. If the workflow is designed properly, then you can imagine that the AI acts as a digital fellow, like a fellow in academia that pre-screens the case for you and measures, identifies perineural invasion, just prepares the diagnosis for you. And you, as an attending physician, just to confirm, yes, you get it right or no, make corrections. So it really functions as a somebody that helps you make a faster, more precise, more reproducible diagnosis. And that whole experience is very nice. So you can use the analogies, I guess, of the chef and sous chef, right? Like if you like cooking, but you don't like cutting all the vegetables, and you have a good chef, everything is prepared for you in like tiny little plates, and you just do the final, most important part, right, of creating a wonderful dish. So this is the same thing. As a capable pathologist, you just find out the case and provide the best diagnosis for the patient.
Well, I think that the notion that you have a chef and the sous chef is interesting, but it does minimize the super complex work you and Dr. Einbaum and your colleagues do. And I want to pick up on a point that Dr. Einbaum mentioned earlier. It seems like using AI is going to free up your brain and your mind space to do other things. And when really smart people have their brains freed up, they don't stop. You do more inquisitive or more interesting work. How do you think, Dr. Borkowski, and I may ask this to Dr. Einbaum later on, this is going to free up your brain to deepen your insights into the professional work you are doing in anatomic pathology?
Okay. As mentioned before, AI can handle a lot of technical aspects of diagnosis, like measuring of the tumor, counting cells, identifying certain structures. This is a very tedious work, and it's around 40% of our work that we do. If you can have a well performing, then you are free up, your brain is free up to be more focused on the so-called important things, right? Making the right diagnosis, not missing small cancers, not missing certain elements that are important prognostically. Also, coming back to your previous question about subvisual elements, right? And elements are the features and patterns within images that are not readily apparent to human eye, but can be detected by the AI, right? So just to use a couple of examples, there are microstructural patterns that you cannot see with your eyes, molecular and genetic markers that the AI looking at changes in HME can identify, but we as human beings cannot. I would also say there are predictive markers that AI can identify in aging, and we don't. So yes, within the not so distant future, the AI will be helping us with additional elements in helping the patients and helping the clinicians to treat the patients.
So I'm thinking about this, and I look at the pathologist, and you and Dr. Einbaum is the intellectual athletes of medicine. And so I think that what we want to do, when I hear it's tedious, I want to protect you from the busy work and let you focus on the brain work. Dr. Einbaum, I'm just going to ask you, how is AI going to free you up or enhance the work that you are doing so you're able to use that big, wonderful brain of yours to make medicine better?
Yeah, so and I can use a perfect example of cytopathology and what cytopathologist does on a daily basis. Let's say analyzing urine samples. So urine samples or pap smears. So majority of cytopathologist work is, like in most of pathology, is screening and trying to isolate abnormal cells and identify a patient that will need a follow-up. So imagine from the batch, let's say 100 slides of urine cytology, at least 90% is going to be normal. So imagine right now my workflow, when I come on my day of non-GYN cytology, I will be reviewing at least 100 slides and I will be selecting maybe 10, maybe less slides or even less with abnormal abnormality, they will be called atypical or high-grade urothelial lesion or suspicions for high-grade urothelial lesion. And imagine, so majority of my work is looking at negative images. So, but it still has to be done. I still have to review those negative images and release them. That goes in the patient record and the patient receive information that is negative. So imagine that majority of my time I spend looking at that. It has to be done. It is very important because this is the still so far the most sensitive and is the most kind of efficient way to screen for urologic abnormalities is urine. So imagine if I had a digital technology help me pre-screen those 90 samples of urine cytology and free me up from that, I would be spending majority of my time looking at abnormal and suspicious or malignant cytology specimens and trying to figure out the best way to help that patient. I would probably be spending more time trying to dig into molecular abnormalities and understanding what is causing that cell to be abnormal or malignant and looking into potential ways to link to clinical trials or whatever technology is available to help me navigate the patient. I had the technology help me take care of that. I would be spending my time developing some exciting projects with Dr. Barkowski.
Well, I think that that's where I was going with this, and you articulated that very well. But let me pivot here away from that for just a moment. I'm going to ask Dr. Barkowski, how do you keep up with this, Peter? I mean, this is a rapidly emerging field that is moving at the speed of light. What kind of community do you have in place, and what are you doing right now? And what kind of support do you and your colleagues need to stay on the cutting edge or the leading edge of this?
Another excellent question. This knowledge, this technology is changing so rapidly that we do need to make an effort to keep up. And what I personally try to do is attend scientific, one of them is yearly meeting that I really like. It's Pathology Visions. It's purely focused on DP and AI, and it's not only national, but it's also international. It attracts visitors from all over the world. I also try to be active in the community. I am on the board of Florida Society of Pathology, and in many many ways, my function is to promote digital pathology and artificial intelligence in the Florida pathologist community. We are also expanding into collaboration with FLASCO, Florida Society of Clinical Oncologists, because this technology promotes cross-reference of ideas and collaboration. So we created a FSP FLASCO meeting once a year, and every year we're getting better attendance, and it is a pure pleasure to discuss certain concepts or certain ideas with our oncology friends. And lately, we came up with an idea of creating an academy of precision medicine. So this is really exciting, and there's a lot of interest among fellows, both in pathology and oncology. So I think that will serve our patients very well. If you want to stay on the cutting edge and contribute as much as you can, because this is a very, very unique time in medicine. It is definitely a paradigm shifting, and many ideas that we have as young medical students conquering cancer, it is within our reach. And this technology allows also global collaboration and analysis of millions and millions of data in such a way that we couldn't imagine in the past. So it's really exciting times.
So those are excellent ideas. So, and I can tell you from my personal example that leadership and is very important. So now, as Dr. Barkowski is actively serving on Florida State Society, I became following his and inspired by him. I joined California State Society of Pathologists, and I'm actively involved with that. And we're trying to bring the level of participation and the level of educational involvement with our members, hopefully to a higher degree. Currently, we're hosting series of AI seminars that are led and coordinated by University of California, Irvine. And this is getting very exciting. So we're able to invite leaders in AI and digital technology in pathology and host those events to young professionals. And I find it very exciting, and it brings a lot of attention. Also, following Dr. Barkowski's participation in College of American Pathologists, I was honored to join California of CAP Society of Pathologists, of cytopathologists. So this is very exciting opportunity for me because, again, we meet every 3 or 4 months, and I'm able to interact and with pathologists from all of the country, who most of them from a large academic institutions and are leaders inside of pathology. This is a very exciting opportunity for me because I learn a lot from those experts, and I'm able to bring that knowledge and in latest updates to my company and share with my national panel of cytopathology that we have in my company. So I'm always excited as a still young professional to see good leadership, and that gives me direction where to follow. And another very important, exciting example and inspiration is our chief laboratory officer, who is heavily involved in clinical informatics, who is on board of American Pathology of Informatics. And I'm very thrilled to be able to have interaction and navigation from on the medical side and then the business side to help me develop and grow as a pathologist who's going forward.
I think that Dr. Anbaum talked about the mentorship part of the work that you're doing. And Dr. Barkowski is a leader, a great intellect, and also a great mentor, but he's also a very young man, okay, just to let you know. But I think that the importance of mentorship cannot be overstated. But also, right along that is the importance of community and your colleagues' thirst for knowledge and your excitement about the future of medicine. Without that community, without that mentorship, without that thirst, and without excitement, we're all stuck in the water, but you have the excitement, the community, the thirst, and the mentorship to move us forward. And again, this is one of the most fabulous times to be practicing as a physician. And I'd say for the younger physicians, it's the most incredibly interesting time and innovative time to be in medicine. So just to summarize quickly, you all, I think it's fair to say, see AI as a symbiotic partner to the work that you're going to be doing. The risks and benefits are there, but as wonderful, moral, ethical, and professional physicians and scientists, you all are aware of that, and you're going to be balancing that very effectively. Yeah, as I often say, we as physicians take an oath, AI doesn't. So we have a responsibility to our colleagues and to the patients who trust us, which is absolutely brilliant, and that comes through. So as we close here, I'd like to thank you all, both personally and professionally, for the work that you all do every day. It means so much to so many of us, not only within our organization, but to the millions of lives that you all touch every day. And I'd also like to thank the audience for taking a few moments out of your day to listen to some of the best minds in medicine. I sure hope you found this to be enjoyable and valuable. Thank you again, the audience, for listening. Thank you, Dr. Enbaum and Dr. Borkowski, for being brilliant colleagues, being brilliant friends, and for sharing all that you know with us every day. So until next time, I'm Dr. Damian Alagia, your host for Diagnostic Dialogues, signing off and hoping that all of you all are having a great day.
Thank you, Dr. Alagia.
Have a great day.